Hey friends, welcome to the Drivecast, a daily podcast designed to help us read it in, pray it up, and live it out. My name's Dan, and I serve as the teaching pastor for our Worthington campus. I am really glad that you are joining me today, whether you're just getting started or closing up your time today. We're going to be in the Gospel of John, chapter 4, looking at the longest recorded conversation Jesus has with anybody in the Bible. It's the story that we remember as Jesus and the woman at the well. Now, I think usually if we think about this story at all, we tend to, without meaning to, we tend to kind of turn this into a polite manual for how to share our faith, which is perfectly legitimate. Or we make this like a neat step-by-step guide for talking to our neighbors or, you know, finding the quote-unquote Samaritans in our lives. And I'm not knocking any of those approaches. They are perfectly legitimate and certainly aspects of this story. I want to kind of take an angle maybe we don't always think of when we look at a story like this. But you see, when we take a story in the scriptures and unintentionally tame it, what we're doing is like caging a story that's supposed to be wild and rugged. And in fact, we're going to see as we look closely at this, there are some like hints of some pretty scandalous ideas or risky ideas that John is presenting as he retells this story of Jesus interacting with this woman. Today, I want to look closely at a detail that completely shifts the gravity of everything that happens next. And most of this is just stuff that is swimming around in the background of the cultural context. It's not even things that John says, it's the way that he presents this story that his immediate first century readers would have picked up on immediately. And their hearts would have been racing as they hear this story, because it's not going to fit what they anticipate about Jesus. Now, let me read this passage and then we'll jump into what I'm talking about. John 4, we'll do verses, start in verse 1. Now, when Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus was making and baptizing more disciples than John, although Jesus himself did not baptize, but only his disciples, he left Judea and departed again for Galilee. And he had to pass through Samaria. So he came to a town of Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. So Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well. It was about the sixth hour. A woman from Samaria came to draw water. And Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink," for his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." We're going to zoom right in on verse 6. There's a lot we could talk about, and I'm going to assume you've already had some dialogue about some of the other elements in this story that we're not going to touch on in this Drivecast. But look at verse 6. Jesus is sitting beside a well in a foreign land. Let me ask you this. Imagine you're watching a movie tonight. And in that movie, you've got two main characters. You've got a man and a woman who work in a busy office. And in a frantic moment, the scene is like quick pace. They turn a corner and they bump right into each other, knocking their coffee, spilling their papers all over the floor. How does that movie end? You know exactly how it ends. This couple, they're going to get married, or they're going to like get together. They're going to date, something like that, right? How do you know that? How do you know that that's how this story ends? Because you have seen it 100 times. It's a pattern. It's what we call a trope. You know, the Bible has tropes. It has patterns and predictable setups that ancient readers could spot a mile away. As clearly as we know what happens in that movie scene we just imagined, ancient readers could look at some of these patterns in the Old Testament and see the ending from a mile away. In fact, one of the clearest tropes in the entire Bible takes place exactly where Jesus is sitting in verse 6, at a well. Whenever a first century listener heard a story about a man traveling to a foreign land and sitting down by a well, alarm bells started to go off in their heads. They knew exactly what was coming. Just think really quickly about the history of Israel. Just some highlights here of some main characters. Genesis 24. Abraham sends his servant to a foreign land to find a wife for his son Isaac. Where does he stop? At a well. Who walks up to that well to draw water? Rebekah, the woman who becomes his wife. A few chapters later, Jacob travels to a foreign land. In fact, John is alerting us that he's even thinking about Jacob because he points out that Jesus is sitting at Jacob's well. But Jacob travels to a foreign land, stops at a well, and who does he meet? Rachel, his future bride. In Exodus, Moses is a fugitive traveling in a foreign land. He sits down by a well, and who does he meet? Zipporah, his future wife. In the ancient Near East, a well, in a meeting at the well, I mean, this is the ultimate meet cute. It's the biblical equivalent of bumping into someone at the coffee shop in a romantic comedy. When a man goes to a foreign well, it means a wedding is coming. That's how the trope plays out all through the scriptures. And John, the writer of this gospel, I mean, he's been kind of dropping these hints as he builds up to chapter 4. I mean, think about it this way. John, chapter 2, Jesus' first public miracle doesn't happen in a synagogue. It happens at a, wait for it, a wedding. And in that wedding, like, Jesus takes on some of the traditional roles that a groom would have occupied in that story. In John chapter 3, John the Baptist is asked to explain who Jesus is, and he points right at him and says, the one who has the bride is the bridegroom. Like, he's going out of his way to identify Jesus as a, you know, a quote-unquote groom. And so when John writes in chapter 4 that Jesus, the hero of the story, travels to a foreign land and sits down at Jacob's well, his original readers, they are holding their breath. The trope is set. The scene is perfectly staged. The divine bridegroom is sitting at the well. Now, the question isn't if John is appealing to this trope. It's why is he doing that? You might even be thinking that right now, like, what on earth would be the point of doing this? Or you might even be asking, like, Dan, where are you going with this idea? Why use a romantic trope to talk about God? See, I think it's because of how we naturally tend to view God. If you are anything like me, like, your default setting is to picture God in, you know, perfectly biblical imagery, a king, a judge. A boss might not be the best biblical one, but we can see that too. We can think about that too. Like, a king wants a subject, boss wants employees, a boss wants your compliance, you to show up on time, to do the work, don't break the rules, and you will get your paycheck. But all over the Bible, maybe the primary picture God uses to describe the kind of relationship he wants with his people, it isn't one of a boss and employees. And the primary one isn't even like a king and his subjects. It's a husband and a wife. He doesn't just want our compliance. He wants our devotion. He wants a relationship built on a deep and mutual affection, vulnerability, not simply duty. I mean, think about the prophet Hosea in the Old Testament. Interestingly enough, Hosea the prophet was sent to the people who would eventually become the Samaritans. But think about the story in Hosea. God's people were constantly running away, giving their hearts to lesser things. And so God tells Hosea to marry a woman who will be continually unfaithful to him. And God uses that actual marriage as a living, breathing sermon to say to his people, this is what you have done to me. You have chased after other lovers. And yet I am still your faithful husband. I am going to relentlessly pursue you and win you back. See, when we understand and picture God as that faithful groom relentlessly pursuing an unfaithful bride, this entire scene at the well comes into sharp focus. Yes, it is about this interaction between Jesus and this one woman, but it is also about so much more. This is why John gives so much attention to this conversation. It's about more than just these two. Jesus hasn't come to argue theology or hand out a to-do list with her. He has crossed the cosmic barrier between heaven and earth to pursue. And the person who wakes up or who walks up to the well is not who anyone would have expected. This is where John breaks the trope. I mean, she isn't this, respectable insider who comes from a high-ranking family. We don't really know anything about her story. She's carrying the heavy baggage of broken promises, and for whatever reason, we don't know what the reasons are, by the way, but relationships that no longer exist and a sense of hidden shame. Maybe that's the reason she's coming in the middle of the day, the hottest part of the day. Friends, in a lot of ways, we, in this story, are not so much like Jesus. We are like the woman at the well. We are the ones carrying deep scars of our own relentless search for satisfaction in places that always leave us thirsty. We assume that because of our track record, even if we would never say this out loud, what we imagine is that Jesus would want to be one who puts distance between us and him. We assume that he would be afraid of being contaminated by our unfaithfulness, and so he would push us away. Instead, this story shows us how Jesus leans in. He doesn't stand at a distance with his arms crossed. He is not demanding that we clean ourselves up before he comes near. He approaches us right in the middle of our profound vulnerability, sits down next to us in our mess, offers to wash us himself. He loves his unfaithful bride so much that he willingly goes to the cross, taking on the death our rebellion has earned, and so that our deep, shameful wounds can be finally healed. This is why the Apostle Paul will talk about Jesus as a husband who sacrificially gives himself for his bride. Now, I know that's a lot. I want to take a moment and pray this up. I want to give you an opportunity just to pause. And maybe you actually press pause here. But I want you to take a moment. And before we try and fix anything today, I think we need to completely reimagine the kind of affection Jesus actually has for us. What kind of affection does he have for you? And maybe you, for a moment, need to pause. Close your eyes, use your sanctified imagination, and imagine yourself sitting at that well as Jesus approaches. What's the look on his face? Is he disappointed with you? Is he frustrated? Is he impatient? Or is he one who desires relationship with you? And take a moment. We'll close with this. I think the real question is, how do we live this out? If you've been following Jesus for a while, your next step this morning, I think it isn't to grab a clipboard, leave the room, go knock on your neighbor's door to try and share your faith. I mean, you cannot manufacture the overflow that the Samaritan woman felt as she leaves to go share. So telling others about Jesus begins when we realize the massive distance he traveled to rescue us. Mission, in other words, starts with awe. When that reality sinks into your bones, you will not be able to keep it to yourself. The woman at the well eventually leaves her water jar behind, not because she was given, you know, a guilt-driven checklist, but because she has encountered the one who knows her and loves her completely. I mean, it naturally spilled over into her community. And so your next step today, for today, is to sit at the well. Refuse the urge to rush. Take a long, unhurried look at the affection of Jesus for you right in the middle of your actual messy life. Thanks for tuning into the Drivecast. We'll see you back here tomorrow.